Hello and welcome to Need to Know, your weekly baking podcast covering everything from the hottest trends in entertainment baking to trusted expertise on your favorite pastime. I'm your co-host, Gina Brzau, s'mores obsessed and amateur baker at best. As always, I'm joined by professional chef, cookbook author, and the creator of Bigger Bolder Baking, Gemma Stafford. Hi, Gemma.
Hi, Gina.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We have a fun little thing to talk about, right? Right off
we
the top.
We do. Yeah. Well, a few weeks ago, we featured, we kind of started a little bit of our own little book club.
Yes.
So far, it's just me and you.
Yes.
But we featured Dee Levy's cookbook, Baking Science, which was really interesting and learned
so
a lot.
So much, yeah.
I'm still reading it. It blows my mind. But this is a little bit different.
Okay. I'm excited.
This combines, if you know, a lot of people know if they follow me on social media, I love a few things. Two of the big things are baking and The Office.
Which I don't know how we've never talked about.
Do you like The Office?
I love it.
Are you serious?
I'm so serious.
Like, how much do you love it?
Like, I love it. I might not be able to, like, quote every episode, but I love it.
Every night I watch The Office on the weekends when it plays like back to back. And I have a child, I have a 2-year-old, and I manage to watch 6 hours a day of The Office. But I'm obsessed. Anywho, a few years ago, I was very fortunate to meet Angela Kinsey, and now we're best friends. And no, we're not best friends, but she's super lovely. And she wrote herself and Jenna Fisher started the Office Ladies podcast. A behind the scenes look at like two people who are on set for like those 9 years. And they just recently came out with a book, The Office BFFs. And it is full of their own, like they rummage through their like memory boxes for photography, for letters, like for everything that like they gathered over the years of filming. So it's like really interesting. It's really funny. It's great. Like they're such great friends.
It's kind of really cool. It's cool to see that.
It is. It's like it's a love letter. It's from the heart. Like just as a huge Office fan, like I was awaiting this book. So I just want to recommend wherever you buy your books, like go get The Office BFFs.
It looks really awesome.
If you're a fan of The Office, it is full of photos behind the scenes.
Oh my God, and I love that you love The Office.
Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. I could literally do a one man show of like any given episode.
Reenacting.
I love
just like off the top of your head, what's one of your favorite scenes?
Now I've got too many. Wait, give me a second.
Okay.
No, I'm trying to think because there's so many people running through my head, like Dwight. Like,
yeah,
I have
like
to
favorite
say,
character moments. Maybe.
I think, you know what's funny? I think throughout the years, and I've been watching a lot of the later years lately.
Yeah.
I think like Dwight as a character, like from start to finish, he was just like amazing. From day one, when he was in the office singing Little Drummer Boy and like annoying Jim.
God, yes.
Until like episode, I said, till on the second last episode where, actually not the second last, but like in the 9th season, he was still like sparring with Jim and like I just think he's such a fan. Like the writing for him was like so fantastic.
I agree.
And I love that in the end, Angela and Dwight got married Michael made an appearance.
Yeah,
and I talked to Angela about that episode and she said that like nobody knew he was actually going to be on set and it was really early morning and it was all hush hush because they didn't want like anybody to know he was going to be there. Like the actors, I don't think they knew he was going to be there.
Holy moly.
So... But yeah, no, I'm obsessed to say the least.
I love that we both love it.
Yeah. So anybody who's a fan of The Office, number one, if you're not, watch The Office.
Yes.
It used to be on Netflix, but now it's on Peacock. And it is on Netflix in Europe, FYI.
Oh.
So when I go home, I can watch it nonstop.
Oh, wow.
And check out The Office BFFs.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Yay. Okay. We're going to switch gears a little bit, get into our hot topics, hot from the oven. This first one is something that I see recipes for a lot. I feel like it's a very classic summer recipe. We're coming up on summer. It's the strawberry shortcake, but it turns the dessert into a cookie. First, I just wanted to get Gemma's read on strawberry shortcake. Did you grow up with it in Ireland? Is it newer to you? Why do we think people are so obsessed with it?
Do you mean the cork shortcake as in like the biscuity kind of with the strawberries and the cream? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a southern thing, right?
I think you might be right. Yeah.
I like it because it's like those lovely soft, like sweet biscuits. Like it's really good.
I've never been super drawn to it.
It's not like it won't be my go-to.
The recipe was popularized by Eliza Leslie of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 1847. It's more of a cake here.
Well, sometimes it is a cake. And then, so you can get layers of like angel food cake.
So that's what I grew up with. Angel food cake.
Oh, okay. So I recently, like literally in the last few days, just did a recipe for that on the website, which was grilled strawberry shortcake with a lime cream.
Wait, grilled?
Yeah, I made angel food cake. I put it on the grill. I lightly grilled it. I macerated strawberries. I piled them on top and then made a lime cream because lime and strawberries are best friends.
We're always so in sync with this.
But it was really good. It was really, really good. But I have to say though, I wasn't sure which shortcake you were talking about. Was it the cakey kind or was it the biscuity kind?
This one, I think this recipe particularly is more about the biscuity kind because if you can see, like I grew up with the angel food cake. Like I remember that's how my dad made it. But this one, as you can see in the photo, okay. It's a lot denser.
Yeah,
that
must be the biscuity kind.
Yeah.
I do like it. It's just not something I'm super familiar with. Now, a cookie version, like I like biscuity things. I like strawberries.
So not a biscuit person, personally.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I'd be okay with that cookie.
It.
Yeah, like I'd try it. I wouldn't like nothing. There's nothing there that I hate.
What? Okay, so a dense cookie, when we're talking about cooking something like this, what could go wrong?
I have to say though, it's a bit makey-uppy. That's my one thing about this kind of dessert.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, remember last week when we talked about the mojito cupcake?
It's just a little bit.
Very makey-uppy.
Okay.
So you're kind of really reaching here with that kind of recipe.
And this one also talked about lemon juice, which I feel like, I know we talked about lemon bars last week. You don't cook with that often. Is it a tricky thing to cook with? Is it easy?
Well, there's a method to the madness. Number one, I haven't seen this recipe that you're talking about, so I don't know. But I'm going to tell you off the top of my head.
This one is a teaspoon of fresh lemon juice.
Yeah, has it got sour cream or buttermilk or yogurt in there?
So it's strawberries, lemon juice, sugar, flour, baking powder, salt,
milk,
cold butter, heavy cream, and then the glaze is sugar, milk, vanilla. For the cream.
And what raising ocean? But you have baking soda in there.
We've got baking powder.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really odd. So
really?
Let me tell you why.
Okay.
So the lemon juice is in there to tenderize the flour. So it makes for a soft biscuit.
Oh my gosh. I would have thought it was flavor.
No. It's to tenderize. It's a chemical reaction. So that's why, I don't know if it's a reaction, if it's not reacting really with anything else. But
it's what,
that's its job in the biscuit there. That a teaspoon is its job. You do the same thing in pastry. You'll put a teaspoon of vinegar or lemon juice into a pastry to make for a soft pastry.
I had seriously no idea.
Yeah. Now, often that is paired with baking soda and or it would be added with their liquid. So it would be added with a milk. Instead of lemon juice, you would replace that cream with buttermilk. And that does the exact same job because it's acidic milk. But you have baking powder in there, which is a little bit funny. But it all makes sense. Like the cream and the baking. See, baking powder reacts with a liquid. So that's your cream. So it all makes sense. I just would have thought for a biscuit.
To make it rise, you would do soda.
No. To make it rise, you would do baking powder.
Okay.
Cakey. You get more of a cakey result with baking powder.
Got it.
For the chemical reaction that I thought they were using the lemon juice for would be baking soda. But they're using it to tenderize the flour. So it wasn't its job.
I love how you can just look at a recipe. Like she's literally just looked at the recipe the first time and she's break it down.
I have to say,
so fast.
One of my skills. I'm not like the best cookie decorator, cake decorator, but I'm really good at reading recipes.
Yeah, that was like, and I'm so happy I asked because I never knew that's what lemon juice was used for. Because I saw it, I was like, huh, you don't really cook with lemon juice that often. This is a strawberry recipe, and also there's not that much. Is it for flavor? Is it not? But that's good to know.
Often
texture.
People, it's it's to tenderize the flour.
Yeah.
Often people, what people do is like Ami, who works with me, she'll often add, like the way I would add vanilla sometimes, like she would add in a dash of lemon juice here and there, especially when working with fruit.
Okay.
And I think a little bit of its flavor, but there's another reason for it now. On the top of my head, I can't think of what it is. But, you know, there's usually a job. Everything has a job to do in baking. That's why people say, can I just add in this or leave out that? It's like, no, because everybody has a job to do.
Right. Everything so just be is careful. There for a reason.
Yeah, it's everything there for a reason. Yeah. So if you don't have lemon juice, is it going to make or break it? Like, absolutely not. You can still make that recipe without lemon juice.
Okay.
But will it be as tender if you left it out? No, it probably won't be as tender. So oh, put
I've,
in the
I've
lemon
learned
juice.
So much from just topic one. I'm like, wow, that was very informative. Our next one is a very frequent question I ask myself, when to use oil instead of butter. Mm-hmm. So I did a little like deep dive. They're both fats. They affect texture and flavor. And they increase like the softness of the substance, right?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I got that right. I'm like double checking each other. Like, did I do my research right? So basically, when do you prefer? Does it matter? Is it?
It does
a big difference.
It is. It is a big difference. Okay. But honestly, you'd really have to. That's a quite a broad or general question. You'd have to kind of pick. I'll tell you. You have to pick a specific recipe and then say to me, "Hey, this calls for butter. Can I use oil?" So, for instance, we'll go back to chocolate chip cookies. Mm-hmm. It usually calls for melted butter, or it calls for softened butter that you have to beat. I get questions like this all the time. Can I replace that with oil? It's like, no, because now you're replacing what was a mass of softened butter to a liquid.
Right.
So you're changing the the consistency. You're changing the flavor. Oil does not have as much flavor as butter.
Yeah.
And you're like before I've said you have to. You know, trade like with like.
Right.
If you were making brownies, and some of my brownie recipes do contain oil, and it's melted butter, you're much better off replacing a melted butter with an oil, because now you're doing like with like.
Got it. Liquid with liquid.
Yeah, so you're going to replace that volume with another volume, but now you also do have to think about flavor and quality and things like that.
I was also reading that another way to determine like whether butter is the right one, you should see if it requires creaming sugar in butter. And if it does, then butter is the best choice.
So like, that's what I said. Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Because you see, and those are not a softened butter that you would use for creaming is a thick consistency. It's
totally.
It's a thick mass of butter.
Okay.
And then you can't just replace that with liquid oil. So you can replace like with like. You can't like replace that one for the other. If your cookie, like some of my cookies ask for melted butter and some of them ask for softened butter. If it was one of my cookies, then could you technically? Yes, you could replace oil for the butter. Would I recommend it?
No.
No, because butter is better flavor. It's salty. It's usually better quality. And like just do the butter.
Okay.
However, like I have lots of recipes that oil is a great ingredient to bake with, and it really does add a lot to a recipe. I will always use oil in carrot cake to add extra moisture extra moisture and stuff. Now, if I didn't have any oil in the house, what I'd probably do is melt down butter and use that instead.
So you wouldn't just like throw a stick of butter in there?
No.
As is?
No, okay. Like with like.
So good to know. Yeah, I was always wondering that because I feel like you think, okay, they're both fats, like they do sort of the same thing, but not really. They really, you got to be careful.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of that comes down to flavor and quality.
Yeah.
You know, I would say butter is superior.
Gemma loves the butter.
I do.
I was going to ask you that next. What do you prefer? Butter.
Yeah.
You prefer butter. Okay.
I'll tell you a little funny story. How do you say butter?
Butter.
Butter. And I know I say butter differently. Yeah. But Zach told me when they translate our videos, it comes up. You're gonna have to correct me if I'm wrong, Zach. But what does it do, Zach? He's not answering me. It does the dialogue of what I'm saying, but every time I say butter, the computer says I'm saying butcher.
Oh my gosh. Butter. Yeah, I guess you do. You say it's more like
it sounds like busher.
Butter.
But I don't know. It's just it's butter. we have a tea thing and yeah, different.
We prefer butter in the recipes. It adds more flavor, better flavor in your opinion. You like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Butter all the way. This next topic, I don't think we've ever covered this. And I thought it'd be something useful that you could lend your expertise to because you have listeners and viewers like all over the world. High altitude baking. Mm-hmm. And we've never really done a briefing on this. So I looked a little bit into this, that the higher the elevation, the lower is the boiling point of water. Things evaporate faster. The higher the elevation, the faster leavening gases. So there's a lot, obviously. I feel like this could probably be a whole podcast in itself. But do you have any tips off the top of your head for people who bake at higher altitudes or things that they can do?
So we have a post on the, I used to live in Tahoe, which is, was high altitude. I worked in a bakery there doing specifically yeasted doughs. So there was all these different rules and things you had to do at high altitude. And because of that, and because of the, like you said, the global audience, we do get emails asking for about high altitude baking. And I have a post on the website about high altitude baking.
Oh, cool.
Off the top of my head, it's been so many years now that I've done it, but I hope I'm not wrong in saying this. It goes either one way or the other. Is a lot of it comes down, like you said, the boiling point of water and stuff like that.
Yep.
The most common thing would be your raising agents, I think. And I think you have to half them when you're baking at high altitude. So your baking powders and stuff like that, you would have to divide.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hold me to that.
Okay.
Go check out. But I do know that check one of the most common, I think, issues is around raising agents. And so when we worked with yeast and things like that, we would have to alter it.
Okay.
So make different cakes and stuff.
So essentially, like say someone finds a recipe on Bigger Boulder Baking they really want to make, but they're at a higher altitude. Mm-hmm. They just have to figure out what that conversion would be to make it.
Yeah. And we have that information on the website.
I also read that the article mentioned that moist recipes like carrot cake, which you had just mentioned, and like biscottis are good to make at like a sea level. That was like a tip that they gave because there's more moisture in them. And I think you lose moisture as you get higher altitudes.
Yeah,
I think
interesting. No, honestly, I don't know. Like this is new. Like I remember being there.
Yeah,
all of our recipes were already adapted for high altitude.
Oh, so you didn't have.
I didn't really know what.
Well, it was a bakery, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't really know. I didn't have to convert anything myself.
The last thing that I'll say is that I found interesting is that flavors have a tendency to be like more dull at the higher altitudes.
Oh, interesting.
So they said robust ingredients, those are important things, like really flavorful ingredients are helpful if you're finding like trouble with it's not tasting the same, for instance.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. A lot of like things that you wouldn't really think of, like having to adjust or figure out, but that's good to know. So there's a post on Bigger Boulder Baking if you guys have questions about that. Cool. Yeah, I just figured we hadn't talked about that one yet. This next one is interesting because last week we touched on this a little. I wanted to do a little conversation about unconventional kitchen items.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I saw a couple articles. One mentioned, which now that we know that you use the shower cap for covering your doughs and sealing in the moisture. The second one was dental floss.
I don't love that trick.
Really?
No.
So they had said for cutting cinnamon rolls, because they had mentioned that when you cut it with a knife, sometimes it smushes it.
Yeah.
But if you can like, Gemma's not into the bacon or the floss.
This like, this isn't against you now, Gina, but like this idea surfaced 8 years ago on YouTube, something like that. And it was like this genius, what they called a hack, which I hate that word, to cut dental floss or cut cinnamon rolls. But the thing about it is I think it's a hack.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is the dental floss does the same thing. It squishes the center. To cut cinnamon rolls, it's very simple. You use a serrated knife.
Okay.
You always use a serrated knife. And with using serrated knife, you move the knife to the food. You don't move the food. So you go back and forth and back and forth. That's what it's made for. Use a serrated knife to cut cinnamon rolls, people. I've seen this time and time again, and it drives me doolally. There's no need to have dental floss. I think that's like, I'm not a fan of that.
No, not for baking for you. Okay. Other than the shower cap, which we touched on last week, so we know that you use that. Is there anything else you can think of that's unconventional that people might be like, oh my gosh, that's surprising that Gemma does that or uses it?
I would say, so I have a few things that I use in my kitchen. Okay. Every day I use scissors for parchment paper, for cutting piping bags, cutting open packets of food, everything. Scissors, I have to have a good pair of scissors. The one thing I use constantly for different types of baking and cooking is a ruler. So in my cupboard,
really?
I have a ruler.
For what?
So I'm making a recipe and it's just like, what size is this pan? Oh, mm-hmm. It's 9 inches. Or roll out your pastry to 15 by 12. Like every day, for some reason, I need a ruler in my kitchen. So the one thing I have to be able to put my hands on are my ruler and my scissors. Yeah. And then the shower cap, when I'm making my dough specifically, if you guys listened to the last week's episode, they're fantastic because I've been sent these kind of proofing caps for doughs from companies.
Right.
And I don't ask me why, but this one company sent me one and it wasn't lined with plastic. It was just fabric. So air was getting through. And the whole point of covering dough doesn't like air at a certain point of its proofing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have it airtight. A shower cap is a really cheap, like easy way to cover your dough and not let any air get into it. It doesn't touch the surface. It shouldn't touch the surface. You can wash them. They're reusable time and time again, and they cost 99 cents. So they're really fantastic. These proofing covers that they sell for $15, I'm not into them. I think, and also shower caps, they're bigger. So you can get them over bigger bowls.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Often you can't get these ones that are made for need for proofing over your mixing bowls.
That is so, because some of mixing bowls are giant, but a shower cap obviously has a lot of like stretch.
Yeah, so I've been a big, big fan of that for a long time.
Scissors, ruler, shower cap. That's a gem you need in your kitchen.
In my when I worked in Tahoe, we used to cover our bowls, but I think I think we used to buy these they looked just like shower caps, but they were for food. But behind it was a shower cap, and that's where I got the idea. It's like, you know, I thought like those kind of caps should be available to everybody, and I was like, wait a second, those things are
so much money. Yeah,
like they're shower caps,
right? And they're, you can usually get them at like the drugstore or anywhere.
Yeah, they're at the pharmacy.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to try and stump Gemma. Can I do it, you guys?
I think so. You know what? You've been on. I've been pretty good. I've had like a hot streak the last little while. So you're probably going to get me this week.
I don't know. Okay, this is a fill in the blank. Sugar binds blank in your bake to keep it together. Oh my gosh, we might have her.
I'm just going to say a word.
Okay.
If she gets
water.
No. And read the sentence. Sugar binds
water in your bake to keep it together.
Okay. No, I didn't know that. I would have said flour does that.
Yeah, because it makes like the web, which I've learned from you.
Yeah, which is like the binder. Oh, okay. No, you got me. Didn't know that.
Okay, let's see if we can keep this going. This one is kind of tricky. In the blank century, baking soda became a common leavening agent. So in what century?
19th.
Yeah.
Would you believe I had a conversation about this a few
weeks ago?
Honest to God, with like my sister. It's a whole big thing. But anyway, this is the kind of stuff I do in my spare time. But yeah,
before I would even finish, I was like, oh, this is going to be tricky. She's like, no, I know it. It's fine. Okay, this one is a true or false, our last one. The browning of the crust occurs because of the reaction between sugar and dry heat.
I'd say, yeah, it's definitely one reason. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're correct. The chemical process that's taking place is called the Maillard reaction, which I never knew. I know that.
Okay, that's the browning of any food. I think of sweet and savory, I think. It's the browning of food.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like Maillard. Like, I always pronounce it wrong. Mallard. You're right. Yeah. I always pronounce it wrong. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got one, you guys. It's okay. We got one. But she didn't even like flinch on the other ones. You just knew them right away. We have three questions from you guys. This first one is from Anne Best on Facebook. Is it better to measure or weigh ingredients?
For complete accuracy, weigh.
Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about this couple episodes ago about you highly recommend everyone getting a scale if they can.
And you know what? If you can, like, a digital scale costs $20.
Yeah.
The scales that aren't digital are like 10. So like, honestly, I used one that was not digital for many years and they work brilliantly. So like whatever your budget permits, like
options.
Yeah, look, there's lots of options. Also, I will tell you that if you go to thrift shops, secondhand stores, stuff like that, like I've gotten weighing scales there. I remember when I started my catering business and I had zero money, I went to a Goodwill and I picked up this tiny little weighing scales for $3.50. And I had it for a very long time. And I used to use it when I was catering. Like, I'd be catering for 60, 70 people. And I had this tiny little weighing scale that I got at Goodwill that I would use constantly. I still have it somewhere.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's good to know. So they're available. You can find them at any budget. Our next question is from Karen McCarthy on Facebook. Can you use flat champagne in any baking recipes?
Why?
I guess like a champagne, the first thing is like a frosting. That's like the first thing that comes to my mind.
Like a champagne cake? No, I...
I was like, no, you can't.
I would... I don't know how I feel about that. I do enjoy champagne. I would much prefer to drink it than I would put it in a dessert. I do have a recipe coming out that is for a Prosecco, a sparkling Prosecco and raspberry granita.
What's a granita?
It's a frozen like ice, kind of icy thing. Yum. Super yummy. That's what I would use champagne for.
Okay.
No, I would say drink your champagne before it goes flat.
Yeah, just enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't have any recommendation for baking with it.
Okay.
Like fruit, you could poach fruit or something. I don't know. It's an expensive ingredient, but I suppose if it's flat, you need a way to use it.
Yeah. Could you just use it flat or you think it would like ruin it?
Make a granita or something. Okay. That's what I would say. Or an ice pop. Do boozy popsicles.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, do boozy popsicles. That's a really good idea to
Otherwise, you would say use it not flat, obviously. If you can.
I would say if you don't drink it, just drink it. Make it into popsicles. Okay. If it's flat, just make it into popsicles.
Okay. That's your go-to is the popsicle. Our last question is from Hannah Hazel on Facebook. This is a great question. Do you have online classes to join?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe we should do a debrief about the academy a little
bit. Yeah, we should. So we started the academy in December. And it is, oh gosh, now it's, what is it, 6-7 months we've been going strong. And we've got an amazing group of bold bakers over there. We offer classes covering like a lot of different topics. Mm-hmm. So far we do a different topic every month. So we've done bread month, cheesecake month, cake month. And we go in depth on certain topics and certain techniques. We've done breakfast pastries. You know, within that, we've done laminated doughs. Last month, we did French sweets. So you would not believe the photos of macarons we got. People just nailed it. They don't know what's coming next, but they're doing a croque en bouche next. That's tomorrow. But there's lots of, you know, we go deep in on one topic. You get 3 long form videos. You get 5 recipes altogether each month. So if you go to academy.biggerbolderbaking.com, all the information can be found there. It's clearly labeled on my website. Every month is something different. You can do month to month or can subscribe for the year. It's totally up to you. You have access to everything. So,
so if someone signs up later, can they access your prior months?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Annie, like, honestly, go check it out. If you have, it's free to look. If you have any questions, ask us. So far, like, people have been loving it. It has taught me a lot. I've learned a lot about topics. Yeah, because now I'm teaching stuff that I really have to be an expert on.
Totally.
So right now we're doing frozen desserts. Next month's frozen desserts. Or this month, sorry, June is frozen desserts. And we're doing savory baking coming up in the summertime, which I'm really excited about. Yeah, really excited
about. So the last thing I think is worth mentioning too, if people have like questions while they're baking, they can always message you guys on there, which I think is an awesome thing that you guys are doing.
Yeah. So this is my favorite part. So it's not just the videos and the recipes and all that stuff. As a member of the Academy, and this is exclusive for the Academy only, we have a concierge service set up. So around the clock, no matter where you are in the world, if you have questions, if you have a problem finding a recipe, or you made caramel and it seized or caramelized or cracked or whatever, it's myself and to my team of experts, and we answer comments around the clock and help troubleshoot. You can share photos there, just get guidance, encouragement, solve problems, whatever it is. So that's probably, in my opinion, one of the best features of the Academy.
And I feel like you don't get that anywhere. Like, you immediately can get answers if you're baking and you're like, oh, I ran into this issue. It's great.
We kind of do a 9 to 10 to 5 where we're online.
Yeah.
But because my team is international, we actually go kind of around the clock, and your comments shouldn't go a few more hours without being answered.
Amazing. That's an awesome feature. Anyways, I think that I'm really glad that you asked that question, because I feel like that's great info, and hopefully more people will join the Academy.
Yeah.
That is all we have for today. As always, you can find me on Instagram at Gina Brazow.
And you can find me at Gemma_Stafford on Instagram. And then also follow Need to Know on Instagram also. And you can shoot us your questions there.
Yes. And otherwise, we will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Gina.